Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, and welcome back to another week of Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you here with us, first hour of a Monday afternoon. And I wonder if you would answer a question for us this hour. Why are you pro-choice? Usually callers call us with a question, but we'd like to know, why are you pro-choice? Given the evidence, given the state of our society, given what you see all around you, do you have a reason that you are pro-choice? And would you be willing to discuss it with us? 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour, Trent Horn, an apologist here at Catholic Answers, highly regarded speaker, but maybe even more highly regarded debater. You've been doing a lot of that debating recently, Trent. Trent is the author of Answering Atheism, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties, and the brand new book, Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love. But the one that we may be referring to most today is Persuasive Pro-Life. Hi, Trent. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Cy. Good to be back.
And so when you wrote the book Persuasive Pro-Life, but that comes from experience with you. You've spent a good part of your life engaging in conversation about life issues.
That's right. After high school, I did some work with the state Right to Life organization where I lived, and then I went and traveled with a pro-life organization called Justice for All. And what they did is, and they continue to do this, they would go to university campuses and set up a large photo exhibit with pictures of the unborn before and after abortion. And it was those pictures, particularly the after abortion pictures, you know, they made a fair number of people upset. And, you know, they wanted to come and talk to us. Some people were just curious, wanted to talk. And it created a great opportunity to dialogue with college students about this really important issue. And after several years of doing this, I took those experiences, among others, and hours and hours of research into the subject to write my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, to help pro-life people have better conversations on this issue. And also, I think it helps pro-choice people, frankly, have better conversations on this issue. Both sides better understand what the key issues are related to abortion, and, you know, be better able to talk about it and sort it through.
Well, for you then, when people would come up to you, maybe who were pro-choice people, and did you learn from the things that they said? Did you ever have pause, say, "Oh, I hadn't thought of that before," or do you? Are we so kind of, I don't know, I hate to think set in our positions is the way to think about it, but are we so set in our positions that you don't hear things too much anymore that really maybe surprise you?
Well, I think there are certainly people like that who are so set in their ways. Nothing is ever going to move them from what they believe, no matter what. But I'm always willing to revise and change my beliefs and notice where I may have erred in a certain point. I mean, for example, it's possible to hold a position such as abortion is morally wrong, or the unborn are human beings, and yet one fact that makes up that position or a statistic, you may find out later is erroneous or mistaken. Yeah. And so then one would revise their views. And I've done that several times. I talk about in my book a common fact related to fetal development that is cited that actually is incorrect if you read the fact in its most literal way. So I talk about that in my book. About other statistics people put forward or broad assertions. So I'm always willing to revise my views. And I've met pro-choice advocates who revise theirs when I present evidence to counter that. And I've met others who have completely changed their minds on this subject. So there's certainly the power and capability to do that, because I think this is an issue that ultimately comes down to reason and evidence that anyone, whether they're religious or non-religious, can accept. And that's why I enjoy talking with pro-choice people on this issue, no matter what their religious or non-religious background is. And so I'd love to talk with people today find out, well, why are you pro-choice? And let's have that dialogue.
888-318-7884 is the number if you would like to share with us why you, in fact, are pro-choice. 888-318-7884. And I can promise you, well, I think I can promise you that the conversation will, at least from our end, will stay civil. I mean, we don't, and I hope even beyond civil, will be charitable, because there's no, it's the point is not to hurt or wound someone. The point is to have an actual conversation about this. 888-318-7884. If you're willing to share with us why you are pro-choice, we would love to hear that. Trent Horn, our guest this hour, has his most recent book, Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love. I want to keep mentioning that while Trent is here with us. Trent, is there how to phrase this? I don't want to phrase things in ways that shut conversations down or make people not want to call. But are there any statistics that tell us, do people change over the course of their life? So that if you're 50, you're more likely to be this way, and if you're 18, you're more likely to be this way, and if you're 80, you're more likely to be this way. Do you see what I'm saying in regard to life issues?
Well, I'm not aware of statistics related to what people believe about whether they change. From what I'm aware, when it comes to statistics, the people who are most likely to oppose legal abortion tend to actually be younger. So young people tend to be more pro-life than their older counterparts. And I see this firsthand when I go to events where there are pro-life and pro-choice demonstrators. The pro-choice demonstrators are usually much older than the pro-life demonstrators. When you compare their marches, the marches of pro-lifers tend to be very young people. Even if you take out the Catholic students that are bused there, just those who come in their own accord, they tend to be younger. So that's one thing I've noticed in the demographics of this issue, that younger people who have opportunities to see the ultrasounds that were the 3D ultrasounds that were taken of them in the womb, if you think about it. I mean, many high schoolers today would be able to see ultrasound photographs taken in the year 2001, 2002, that clearly show there's you, and it looks just like you, even at 9 or 10 weeks, has your same facial characteristics and things like that. So that may be one element involved about the demographics of belief on this issue. But obviously, they change from person to person. That's why I like talking to individual persons who call into our show.
888-318-7884 is the number. If you are pro-choice, this is a day for you. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to have you share with us why. Why did you come to that conclusion that you should be pro-choice? Should we be pro-choice as well? Maybe you want to make that argument. 888-318-7884. Trent Horn is our guest. He is the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, among his many other books. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll go to your calls on why are you pro-choice. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Talking about abortion can be scary, but so is anything with which you're unfamiliar. People need to learn how to talk about abortion in ways that inspire confidence in the truth of the pro-life position. We must talk about abortion because we are afraid. Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is the new book by apologist Trent Horn that teaches you to face those fears, to engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue with the goal of persuading others. Field-tested on college campuses, Persuasive Pro-Life will help you to change people's hearts and minds and begin to build up a pro-life culture in today's world, one person, one conversation at a time. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue today by calling 1-888-291-8000, going to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area. Also available as an ebook.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In John 15:26, when Jesus promised the Advocate, He then warned the disciples that they would be expelled from the synagogues. The hour would come when they would be killed as an act of worship by ignorant people. Now, why does God allow this to be so? Why not have everyone be of an accepting mindset? But such is not God's design. He did not program us to be benign automatons. We can kill the apostles and the prophets who came before them. We can even persecute and put to death the Son of God. Who is this unfathomable being that he allows such evil to rear its wrath upon the sacred? He is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who transcend the universe and yet are imaged in our very DNA. Because we know the Father and the Son, we revel in such mystery. The Spirit has indeed breathed on us. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us this Monday afternoon. Trent Horn is our guest. Trent Horn is apologist here at Catholic Answers and well-known writer and speaker and debater. And Trent, because there are quite a few calls coming in, you feel comfortable just going right to calls?
Sure, absolutely.
All right, let's go to Becky in Pasco, Washington, listening on 100.3 EWTN. Becky, your question, or no, I said that wrong. Becky, you mm-hmm. wanted to tell us why you are pro-life.
Pro-choice.
Pro-choice.
Okay, I want to make it clear that I am not a Catholic, but I've been thinking heavily about it and reading a lot about Catholicism. This is one of the issues that I struggle with because I am pro-choice, but I'm also pro-life. I recognize that what we have here is an ideal, and then we have a reality. And when I look around, I see, and as a woman, I can see, and I've certainly read enough history to know that women have been horribly punished for becoming pregnant by, you know, they have to make this decision. They cannot have another child. They can't afford it. They're in a horrible position. It's like contraception with the Catholic Church. I believe in the ideal. It's great if you have a loving husband. And then you look at these women that don't have that. And so for this reason, I believe that abortion should not be illegal. I certainly believe it should be rare.
Becky, why do you think abortion should be rare?
Because I think it should hardly ever or never happen in an ideal world. But we just don't live in that world, and that's
right.
What I struggle with.
Oh, sure, sure. But Becky, I want to get really specific here. What is it about abortion in particular that makes it so that you think it should rarely happen? What in particular about abortion?
Because it's the murder of a human being.
Okay, so let me see if I understand your position. You're saying you don't like the murder of human beings. In an ideal world, we wouldn't murder human beings, but
That's
it should
right.
be but it should be legal to murder human beings because some people think it's necessary.
No, I don't think people. I think that if someone is at a place in their life where they absolutely a woman is at a place in her life where she absolutely cannot have this child. It's going to kill her and deprive her other children of a mother or something, you know.
So Becky, you mean if a woman's life is in danger from a pregnancy?
Or it's just too much for her and she will break under it.
Okay, so Becky, let's go back a little, though. You said you disagreed with my summary. Tell me what was wrong with it. Your view is the murder of human beings should be legal if the murderer thinks it's necessary or they have no other option. Isn't that what you just said to justify abortion? Women think they'll break or they have no other option. It's hard for me to understand the legal killing of human beings just as one person thinks they need to do that.
I think we need to have some sort of place where we go where we don't have black and white. You know that's what a lot of people struggle with Catholicism. That's what a lot of people struggle with Christianity.
When you say
we have to have a place where people are.
So you say you're against black and white. You mean like absolute standards?
You know, I understand absolute standards, and I'm that kind of person. And I have all my life been that way. I have strong feelings about personal behavior and choices. But I really struggle with making it illegal for a woman to end a pregnancy that will destroy her life.
What do you mean by destroy her life? You mean You mean change her life, such as she won't be able to continue school? Because here, Becky, here's the problem I have. Would you agree with this? If unless let's look at the majority of cases, not where a woman's life is in danger, but say, you know, her boyfriend or husband will leave her, she'll have to drop out of school. I would say, would you agree that abortion will change her life, but when it comes to the child, it won't literally destroy her life, it'll change her life, but would you agree abortion will literally destroy the child's life?
Yes. Okay. But that, in that case, I would say have the baby and give it up for adoption if you do not want to waste. I'm very big on that. Let's not abort, let's adopt.
Okay, great. So it seems to me that in some cases you can see, all right, no, violence is not a good answer to this solution. Let's choose a nonviolent approach. So I guess what's hard for me, Becky, I just wonder, I think you would agree you wouldn't support this kind of approach for a born child. Like, let's say, for example, a woman couldn't get an abortion and she's in a desperate situation like you talk about, all right? And she gives birth at home even. And now she doesn't know what to do, and she's freaking out. She's got this baby, doesn't know how to take care of the baby, and she decides to start giving the baby a bath, and she walks away for a minute. And she looks back and sees that the baby has slid under the water and is drowning, okay? Now, if she just lets that baby drown, she gets her life back the way it was. Do you think she should do that, or do you think she should pull that baby out of the water and not let it drown? What do you think she should do in that case?
She should not kill the baby.
Should it be illegal? Let me continue real fast, then I want to hear your thoughts. Should it be illegal for her to kill the baby in that bathtub? Should it be against the law?
Absolutely, and she probably would go to jail for that.
Then why not have that same attitude towards that baby a few days earlier when he or she is in the womb? You know, what's the difference?
Ideally, she should, but if you make it illegal, women are driven to horrible places where they have to have under-the-counter abortions, and their lives are literally put into danger. If they can't go to a doctor and have an abortion legally, and they are going to have an abortion, then if it's illegal, now you're talking exploitation of women who want abortions by doctors who exploit.
Okay, so Becky, let me summarize now this new position you're putting forward. That what you're most concerned about are illegal abortions. So it seems to me what you're saying is it should be legal for a bigger human being to kill a smaller human being. That way it's safer for the bigger human being. Isn't that what you're saying?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you will always have women who will want to end a pregnancy. If you cut off all channels of that, they will attempt it.
So you want to make it
harm them.
So your concern is to make it safer for the mother, the bigger human being, to kill the baby, the smaller human being.
I have trouble thinking of a mother or even a teenager going to a back alley abortionist. Yes, I do. They're going to do it, Trent.
Is every woman going to break the law? Don't most women
certainly
obey
not
the law?
Certainly not, as I would. But I have been very fortunate in my life, and I don't have had to make that decision. I would never kill a baby. Like I said, when we first started, I'm pro-life. But I think you have to have an element of choice at some level.
Okay. Well, I think I'd like you to consider what I've talked about. Becky, and also I'd like you to stay on the line. I'd like our call screener to get back to you, so please stay on the line. Don't hang up, because what I'd like to do is to get your address, and I'd like to send you a copy of my new book, and here's why. I wrote a book called Why We're Catholic, and I want to send it to you because you said you have an interest in Catholicism. You've read about it. I think this book will help you, and chapter 21 of the book is called Why We Protect Life. So I'd like you to check that out, and some of the other chapters might be helpful for you as well. So please stay on the line so a call screener can get to you, and we'd love to send you a copy of that and to think over a little bit more of what we talked about. So thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you very much, Becky. Yeah, please stay and get that book. 888-318-7884 is our number. Trent Horn is our guest, and we are asking you, why are you pro-choice today? We go now to Bob in Kenosha, Wisconsin, listening on 88.5 WFFI. Bob, your question for, or excuse me, your comment for Trent Horn.
Hi. You're familiar with the Catholic belief of just war theory. It's in your catechism.
That's correct.
That seems to be a really explicit and very carefully drawn out example of pro-choice in the situation of aggression and aggressors and the legitimation of violence in specific. It lays out specific ends justify means through a teleological ethic. Would you agree with that?
Well, the just war doctrine, which has its roots in St. Augustine, and you can find that in paragraph 2309 of the Catechism, does put forward conditions where it is justified to use lethal force in the context of war, but they are very specific conditions. That's correct.
2307. Sorry.
Well, 2307 talks about the fifth commandment and begins about talking about avoiding war, but in 2309 you get the four conditions. But in any case, are you saying that the just war criteria applies to abortion?
Teleological ethic. Okay? It's a teleological ethic. It considers the situation. It respects those in charge of the lives involved in sending folks to war to fight, potentially taking lives, potentially subjecting their own lives to being harmed or ended. It respects that decision of that nation. Correct?
That is not what the just war doctrine says, because a nation could be incorrect in the judgment that it reaches. Here are the conditions that are put forward for legitimate defense by military force. It says, first, this is put forward as a response. A response to a threat or attack. So it says that in the response, the damage inflicted by the aggressor on the nation or community must be lasting, grave, and certain. All other means of putting an end to the conflict have to be shown to be impractical or ineffective. There have to be serious prospects of success. And the use of arms must not produce evils greater than the evil to be eliminated. So that's why, for example, many Catholic theologians would say the use of nuclear weapons in a populated area would not be compatible with just war doctrine, because they would create greater evils than what you're trying to reduce. So I would disagree with your notion the just war doctrine is purely teleological, or it's only about the ends. Ends do not justify intrinsically evil means. So for a war to be just, you cannot do something intrinsically evil to win the war, such as intentionally murder innocent civilians, for example.
Correct. I see what you're saying about that, and I may have used the word teleological too broadly there.
Okay.
But in a situation like, for example, in what your previous caller was struggling with talking about, and what you were asking her, if in the life threat of the woman bearing the fetus, if that life would end, if she would justify that. That's similar to what you're describing in reading those four or five paragraphs from the Catechism.
Yes. Well, let me explain this then. In cases where a woman's life is in danger in pregnancy, it wouldn't fall under the principles of just war doctrine, because the child is not an aggressor. The child is doing what they naturally do. There's just some other kind of defect or condition where the child's natural development is causing harm. The child's not an aggressor in any way, shape, or form. Well, what we would put in this situation, what we would apply, would be the principle of double effect. And that's the idea that a person can act in a way that results, for example, in death without intending it. So if someone breaks into my home and is going to kill my family, I can kill them in self-defense, for example. But I wouldn't be justified if they're running away from my home and shooting them in the back. That would just be straight-up murder. So in the case of a woman's life's in danger, we can act such as by removing a cancerous uterus or a damaged fallopian tube, and the child's death is indirect, though tragic, but not directly willed. But abortion is directly willed, and that's why it's intrinsically evil.
Thank you very much for that call. We'll be right back with more Why Are You Pro-Choice? With Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn is coming right back.
EWTN News Nightly with Lauren Ashburn.
As a journalist, I held people accountable, and that's what I want to do here. I want to hold government, politicians, leaders, moral leaders accountable for the actions that they take, and to do it in a way that gives our Catholic audience something new that they would not find anywhere else.
EWTN News Nightly with Lauren Ashburn, weekdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
As legend tells it, 500 years ago, a disaffected Augustinian priest nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral. The evidence that he actually did this is pretty thin, but Martin Luther's objections to Catholic teachings concerning purgatory and indulgences set off a series of countless ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. The faithful Catholic wants to be God's instrument in healing these ruptures, but may not know where to begin. Join us this September 28th to 30th as we tackle the topic at Catholic Answers' 4th National Apologetics Conference, The Reunion of All Christians, a lively and inspiring conference designed to ignite and inform your faith. We've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. This is an event you don't want to miss. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to leave you wanting more. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Cy Kellett, your host, Trent Horn, our guest. And while we got Trent here with us, I will mention that one more day on we have a promotion. Well, no, it goes on beyond, but I want to mention it while we've got him here. Why We're Catholic, Our Reasons for Faith, Hope, and Love is Trent's latest book. And if you're looking for an explanatory book that helps you understand the various reasons why we're Catholic, and then, like you mentioned, chapter 21, where why we protect life is one of them. So it's about why we believe and do the things we believe and do as Catholics. This is the book for you, and you can get it for $10 right now if you call 888-291-8000 or go to the online shop at catholic.com, shop.catholic.com. And oh, and I was right here. It says I have a note. Today is the last day to take advantage of this special price. If you want to purchase 20 copies, because it's a great book to just give out, to have on hand to give out to folks, they'll ship you 20 copies for $3 a copy. That's $60 for 20 copies. 888, if you want to order that, 888-291-8000. You can also get the ebook for only $3.99. 888-318-7884 is our number here. We're asking folks to share with us why they are pro-choice so that we can, we hope, have a civil and even friendly conversation about these things. We go now, Trent, to Armin in Findlay, Ohio, listening on 99.1 FM. Armin, your comment for Trent Horn.
Hello. My primary reason, there are a few, would be that education and contraception would be a surefire way. Well, not surefire, but more likely to prevent the possibility of an abortion rather than making it illegal, which in countries where abortion is legal has a higher rate of abortion than in countries where it is legal and controlled.
Oh, you mean where countries where abortion is illegal, there are more abortions than in countries where it's legal?
Yes.
Did you get a source for that?
That's a difficult part. I was on a drive here. I researched it a while ago, so I can't give you a name at the moment. I apologize.
That's
about
fine.
That.
Oh no, that's quite all right, Armin. And I've heard that claim made by multiple people, and I know the Guttmacher Institute, which used to be the research arm of Planned Parenthood, has made that claim, and people put that out. But I think that it's incorrect, and it doesn't follow both from an empirical and even from a common sense perspective. For example, we know there are countries where abortion has very, very low rates, such as in Western Europe. Switzerland has very low abortion rates, things like that. But actually, they restrict abortion more in these Western European countries. They have more laws. It's more illegal there than it is in the United States. In those European countries, abortion is illegal after the first trimester, for example. Yet they have lower rates, even though they have more illegal abortions. Second, the countries that actually have the highest abortion rates in the world are places where it's legal and the government pays for it. Russia and China, I think, have actually the highest abortion rates in the world. And abortion's legal. The government often pays for it. So I don't really think there's a connection. And I also think that common sense-wise, if you think about it, if an activity is legal, more people will do it than if it's illegal. I mean, for example, if we got rid of the speed limits, Armin, do you think people would in general drive faster?
No. That is a red herring that branches off to a different topic than what we're talking about. Because the issues such as drug use and alcohol use have increased with use when those were made illegal, such as in Prohibition. And in addition, when you spoke about Western Europe, you're talking about countries that are more educated in general than the United States are and are more free to talk about sex and more open about it, about talking about sex and contraception. So those are other examples where education and contraception perhaps does more than the restriction of legality in abortions.
Well, I think you'd have to rely on education here and particular types of education, because in places like China and Russia, contraception is also widespread as well. But I think the point you bring up about, well, there's other things in these countries, I think that raises to light a fallacy of reasoning called correlation but not causation. Just because things are related doesn't necessarily mean there's a causal element there. So in countries where many people choose illegal abortions, for example, or have, you know, choose abortion even if it's illegal, it may be the case the reason people choose that is because they're impoverished countries, for example. And it's not really related to the way the law is one or another. But let's go back to that common sense principle, though. If an activity is legal, more people do it when it's illegal. Outside of abortion, isn't that true for everything else?
You're saying that more people do it when it's illegal with everything else?
No. When an activity becomes legal, more people choose to do it, since most people are law-abiding citizens. Most people follow the law and what the authorities say. So, if you take away speed limits, people drive faster. And if you look at other, situations, when something becomes legal, more people take part. You can even see this in the United States. If you look at abortions that took place even before Roe versus Wade, one statistician said there might have been about 98,000 a year. But then after abortion became legal, it quickly jumps to 500,000 and then 1,000,000. So that, though, is, I think this is an interesting factual question. But at the end of the day, we have to look at the moral issue, Armin. And that is, what is abortion and is it right or wrong? Because justice demands that crimes against innocent people be made illegal. So I'm not sure what you think about this. Do you think that even if rape was decreased in certain countries, if it were legal, that we should make rape legal, or that rape should just be illegal because it's a crime against women? Do you see the comparison I'm drawing?
Yes, but that's a red herring. It's an entirely different subject. The rape is a single decision to harm another sentient. It's a different concept altogether.
Than abortion,
yeah.
Okay, so this
also, well, different arguments against abortion for me involve against making abortion illegal is that I don't view fetuses as sentient, and sentience should be the key factor, not human beings.
What do you mean by sentience?
That means intelligence above a certain point via the ego, containing the ego.
So when you say ego, you mean a sense of I or self?
Yes.
Do rats or pigeons have egos?
I don't know about rats, but I do believe elephants, cows, dogs, and when a baby is born and when it starts absorbing all the information around it. Before sentience, though.
You think a newborn baby has an ego, or they think I am this, and they have a sense
of
intelligence?
They're beginning to develop one, yeah.
They're beginning to develop one, or they have one?
How can I define that? I'm not a specialist in that field, but at some point between then and an age that we're all familiar with, 4 or 5, there is an ego.
Right, but this is really important that we have to be able to define it, because you're talking about who it's okay to kill or not kill.
You can't even use the word kill. I think that would make be an assumption of taking or murder. It's a heavily loaded word in this.
What is killing?
To kill would be the removal of life.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
What does it mean if the unborn human organism is alive, it's growing, so we need abortion to kill it.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the key here is do you think then that the killing of another human being, like myself or Cy or anybody else, is morally equivalent to killing, like, a cat or a cow? They're morally equivalent because sentience is all that matters?
Nearly. There is a degree of sentience that's different. A cat is incapable of contemplating abstract thought.
Okay, so it's not. So let's take a cow, for example. Do you think people who eat cheeseburgers are, like, moral monsters because they ate a sentient being?
I wouldn't say monsters, but less moral than those who don't, yeah.
So I'm guessing you don't eat meat?
I don't, yeah.
Okay. But if your home was infested with rats, would you? You're saying you're not sure if you would fumigate it?
It's a good question. I think I would in that case.
You would, because a rat, I mean, rats are obviously, they have a minimal amount of intelligence, right? But not enough for you to think their lives matter. Okay. So then for me, I guess your logic, it entails there's nothing wrong with killing a newborn baby because a newborn baby is not smarter than a rat.
Is it not?
No, it's not.
Is the baby also a burden on society? Because then there's other factors that come into that. I'm a fan of Peter Singer, actually. And so he goes as far to say that, like, that is not wrong in certain conditions.
Well, I guess for me is, so you're saying it is okay to kill. You're putting conditions here. What I'm saying is, which beings are we allowed to kill and which ones are we not allowed to kill? And so you're not even sure when it comes to rats. I mean, for many people, a newborn baby, especially in, let's say, a developing country, is a burden. Should they be allowed to kill if they live in an impoverished area of India or, of South America? Should they have that choice to kill a newborn infant they believe is a burden, just as someone might kill a rat that's a burden to them here in this country?
I suppose there might be a situation where it's possible. Every case is a case by case study. I can't say yes or no to that. Just like every abortion might be morally right or wrong depending on its outcomes. I float completely in the gray. There is no black and white.
Except that it's black or white for you that sentience is what matters. That's definite.
Yes, but unless, of course, sentience are invading, right? Like, you know, there's always going to be conditions that break the rule.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think I'll let our listeners think more into that. We're going to have to go to another break here. But I think that this is the logical conclusion of those who say the unborn do not matter because they don't have higher order thinking skills. If you hold that view and you're consistent about it, then you have to be treat newborns the same as you would treat pests, because they have an equal kind of sentience. And any other approach to say, well, and in fact, what's funny is I once met Peter Singer about 9 years ago. And in an audience, I asked him about this, because I said my parents once euthanized our pet dog because he was incontinent and they didn't want to pay thousands of dollars to treat him. And I said to Singer, what if it wasn't my pet dog? What if it was my baby brother? Should it be different? And he hemmed and hawed, kind of like what Armin said, well, emotions, different circumstances. But at the end of the day, Singer even said, you know, no, there is no difference. And Cy, I'll tell you this. People came up to me later and said that, you know, I was ignorant, a simple-minded person for just saying, well, just because you're a baby, you matter.
Yeah.
Well, that's the poison that comes from the ivory tower we have to watch out for. So something for our listeners to think about.
It is indeed. It's rare. It used to be, I think, rare that you would hear someone advocate the possibility that you could take the life of infants. It's striking and horrifying. Yeah.
But it's common.
Yeah.
That's why in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, I have an appendix and a whole appendices on answering infanticide because it's coming.
Armin, thank you for the call. I hope you will continue to listen and call again, perhaps, especially when Trent's on, because I think that was a very helpful conversation for all of us. And I don't know what else to say. If you're going to advocate the killing of infants, we've got to take a break. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you. Right now, Catholic Answers is conducting its summer campaign. It's a crucial time because we need to offset the drop in donations that occurs every summer. If you're able to give $50 or more, to thank you for your support, we have several gifts we'd like to send you. First, a signed copy of the full 3-CD set, Lepanto, The Battle That Saved the West, so that you can get the full story about this crucial, history-changing intervention of Our Lady of the Rosary. We'll also send you the three latest volumes in our 20 Answers series. They cover apparitions and revelations, witchcraft and the occult, and the Church. If you're able to donate $90 or more, we'll also send you Carlo Broussard's CD, Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking, which has a free 38-page downloadable study guide. We'll also send you Stephen Weidenkopf's 2-CD set, The Real Story of the Reformation, just in time for its 500th anniversary. And we'll send you Dr. Edward Sree's new book, Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love. Finally, if you're able to donate $180 or more, we'll also send you Trent Horn's 12-part audio interview series, The Apologetics Collection, in which he picks the brains of people like Carl Keating, Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Patrick Madrid, Steve Ray, Devin Rose, and more on a host of the most pressing apologetic issues. Finally, we'll send you a hardback copy of the beautiful, illustration-filled book, Fatima Mysteries, Mary's Message in the Modern Age, just in time for the celebrations happening now of the famous Fatima apparitions, which took place exactly 100 years ago. Every year, Catholic Answers seeks to win souls for Christ in countless ways, but we can't do this without your help. To learn how you can help Catholic Answers, visit Catholic.com and click the 2017 Summer Campaign banner. That's the 2017 Summer Campaign banner at Catholic.com.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Well, welcome back. Thank you so much for being with us today. For those of you who would like to speak with Trent, we have some lines open. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. We're discussing today Why are you pro-choice? If you'd like to share with us your arguments or defenses for being pro-life, we'd be very happy to engage in a polite, friendly conversation with you. I can't you know what, Trent? I need a little palate cleanser. So I want to talk about something else just for a quick minute, because I did want to get this in, and I think now might be a good moment because I'm still recovering from a previous caller. You're going to walk in the footsteps of Jesus.
That's right. Next Easter, I'm very excited about this. I'm going to be leading a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. So next Easter, I think it's March 23rd through April 2nd, we're going to be going to the Holy Land, and we're extending the trip a little bit by a few days because we're going to spend several days in Jerusalem during the Triduum. We'll do, you know, Mass up in the upper room on Holy Thursday. We'll do the Way of the Stations of the Cross on Good Friday, Mass in the Church of Holy Sepulchre, where Jesus' tomb is, on Holy Saturday or Easter Sunday. So I'm really excited about this, to lead people through the Holy Land. I'll be there giving talks on our faith, on apologetics, how to defend our faith, how to dive deeper into the Scriptures. So it's really wonderful. If our listeners want to learn more about that, they can go to holyland2018.com. That's holyland2018.com, and that's for my pilgrimage to the Holy Land next Easter. And the first 20 people that sign up will get $100 off. So I think it's going to be a wonderful thing to dive deeper into your faith, and I hope our listeners will check it out.
Very good. Say it again, Holy Land 2018. That's where you go.
Yeah, just holyland2018.com.
All right, why are you pro-choice is our topic this hour. Jeff in Sacramento, California has been waiting a bit. Jeff, he's listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Jeff, your question or your comment for Trent Horn.
Well, basically, since it's murder, according to Trent, then it should, you know, a woman or a doctor should be put in jail. Since it's premeditated, I would suggest that the sentences would probably be 40, 50, or in some states, maybe even the death penalty. And I certainly don't want to see that.
So, Jeff, your objection then to making abortion illegal is that you don't want the people who cause the baby's death to be punished.
Correct.
So do you think in general that people who commit homicide should not be punished, or just in this case?
Say that again.
Do you think in general, if a person kills another person, they shouldn't be punished? Or is it only in the case of abortion where you think the perpetrator should not be punished?
In the case of a homicide, I would definitely want the person to be punished. But since this is premeditated murder, according to your definition, correct? Am I incorrect on that?
When it comes to abortion?
Yes.
Premeditated murder has different conditions attached to it. Murder is the unlawful, malicious, premeditated would make it redundant. Murder is the unlawful, malicious, premeditated taking of a human life. And so when it comes to abortion, it would depend on the circumstance with the woman who chooses it, whether she is fully premeditated or culpable. So it would depend on the circumstance, just as it does with homicides that deal with born people. Because even with born people, you can have homicides that are murder or not murder.
Correct. And wouldn't you agree that most doctors and I would say 95% of the women know exactly what they're doing?
I don't know the statistics for those who go in to choose abortion procedures. I do know that the doctors are very highly educated about dismembering and killing the fetus or embryo, so they certainly do would know what they are doing. They're trained to do that. So I want to go back, though, Jeff, to my question, which is what you said. Yes, someone who commits homicide, the killing of another human being, should be punished. You did agree to that.
No, you're trying to out. I want you to answer the question. Is this not premeditated murder?
In some circumstances, abortion might be premeditated murder.
Okay, do you want to put these people in jail for long periods of time? Yes or no? Simple question.
Yeah, I think people who kill the unborn should be punished. For example, when Scott Peterson killed his pregnant wife and unborn son, Connor, he was legally punished for killing that unborn baby. There are other men who kill unborn babies. They are punished, and many times they go to jail. So let me turn it back around to you, Jeff. If a man goes to jail for killing an unborn baby. Should women also receive the same punishment since men and women are equal?
How does the man kill? How did this person kill the unborn baby? Excuse me.
In different cases, it depends. Some people might kick the woman or stab her. Other times, they may just give her an abortion pill and cause an abortion.
If a man kicks a woman or stabs a woman, that would be a case. But you still haven't answered my question, but I don't think you want to. Do you want to put hundreds of thousands of women in jail for premeditating killing a baby? Simple yes or no, Trent.
Jeff, I believe that if someone kills a child, they should be legally punished, whether it is a born or unborn child. That answers your question.
Very good. So we'll have a lot of hundreds of thousands of women serving 30 years in jail. That's great.
I didn't say that. I said legally punished. Now, since I answered your question, I'd like you to answer my question. Do you agree if a human being kills another human being, they should be legally punished?
Yes.
Okay. Is a human fetus or human embryo, before they are born, are they a human being?
Not in my opinion. I feel that there's a difference between a woman who has autonomy over the child, is not yet separated from the mother and is still in her body. And I think there's a difference. That's why I disagree with the previous caller on infanticide. And I disagree that infanticide is going to be legal. I'd like you to predict which country is going to legalize infanticide in the next 20 years.
Well, they already have euthanasia of children in Belgium and in Europe. So it won't surprise me if infanticide becomes legal in Europe in the next 10, 20, or 30 years. But let's go back then to what you're saying. So it seems that you said the child is dependent. I guess I'll ask you, you say, well, it's not a human being. What is a human being?
Okay, well, now we're just going, and I completed my point. You apparently agree that it's fine to kill, to put women in jail, and that's fine. That's really all I wanted to talk about, to be honest with you.
Because you believe that people who commit homicide should be punished, except in the case of abortion, because the baby is just very dependent. You think there shouldn't be legal punishment if you kill a human being who happens to be very dependent and helpless. That's your view, right?
I live in the real world, and I don't want to see thousands of women put in jail because they had an abortion.
So you're okay seeing millions of babies be killed, though?
I'm saying I do not want to live in a world where women are being put in jail for having an abortion. That's basically it.
Why?
We just disagree. That's just my gut feeling and my genuine feeling.
So your argument is on par with someone who says, I don't think that thousands of white people should be put in jail for slavery because that's my gut feeling. Your view is no different than that, right?
Let me ask you this. When Lincoln and the other northern politicians wanted to end slavery, they generally wanted to end slavery, but they did not want to have a civil war. So they would have accepted, if the South had not attacked them, they would have accepted the continuance of slavery for a while, at least, because they did not want a war. Does that make them hypocrites? I say no. I don't think Lincoln and the other northern politicians were hypocrites.
I'm not asking about the factors that led up to the Civil War. What I'm saying, Jeff, is your argument is just, I don't want to see certain people punished for killing human beings because my gut says, don't punish them, those human beings don't matter. That is identical to people who said, those who abused children, enslaved African Americans, don't punish them because those people don't really matter, and that's how my gut feels. Well, I'm sorry. I believe not in just following your gut. I believe you should follow your mind and reason that if human beings matter, they all matter regardless of size, age, or level of development, and all of them, from conception to natural death, should be protected under the law. So hopefully you can give that some thought.
More with Trent coming right up. Another hour of Why Are You Pro-Choice? Lots of folks on the line. Stay on the line. Don't go anywhere. We're going to get to your questions. And if you haven't called yet, 888-318-7884 is the number. Why are you pro-choice? We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.